Welcome to Ghostbusters, the radio show that talks about strange things in the neighborhood and weird stuff that don't look good. Talk about stuff that's messing with your head and crazy stuff that's happening in the bed. Why? Because many church folks are falling in the darkness, and the Bible calls us to walk as children of light. The Bible says, see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise. Redeem the time, because the days are evil. Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to Ghostbusters, the radio show that talks about strange things in the neighborhood and weird stuff that don't look good. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the things that don't look good today in the neighborhood is the rise of Islam, and the problem with the rise of Islam, ladies and gentlemen, is really that we are not really worshiping the same God, and they really have an inroad into the black community. You know, back in the 50s and the 60s, you saw the black Muslim, you know, Malcolm X and all of them. Then looked like it kind of died down a little bit. But now, I mean, it is full force. And now we're seeing all kind of nationality of people that are converting to Islam. My church here, Bible Way Community Baptist Church, is less than a half of a mile from the largest mosque in the state of Texas. And when you go by there on Friday, matter of fact, Friday around 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, they have to have a police out there directing traffic. It's so much traffic. But you ought to see all of the different people that are walking. I mean, they're walking to go there to the mosque. It looks like it's a rainbow of people. I mean, different nationalities from all over the world, it seems. And particularly a lot of white people here in America and a lot of black people in America are converting to Islam. But let me get on out of the way and let you hear this for yourself. We have a speaker today. His name is William Federal, and he has been on before. But this guy is just a wealth of knowledge. So get close to your radio and listen.
Well, thank you so much. My wife and I feel so at home here at Fellowship Church, and we want you to know how much we love your pastor. And if there's a man that I feel like is a brother to me, it's Pastor Gary Clark. And thank the Lord with me for your pastor, Gary Clark. Well, some of the things we're going to talk about today are a little bit serious, but we need to learn about it. And where else can we learn about it but in their church family? But it makes us appreciate Jesus all the more when we compare him to what else is out there. Sort of like going to Nebraska makes you appreciate Florida more, right? So we got Florida all the time, and so sometimes we have Jesus all the time, and we forget how special it is that we have him when we look at the opposite. So we're going to go through this sort of quickly, and a book and a DVD that I put together called What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, A History of Islam in the United States. And then a DVD that I do a television program, and this is 5 half-hour programs where I talk about that. And so now, the majority of Muslims are not violent, but some are. And the some is the ones we're concerned about. And so we begin to see that 9 of the 10 worst countries persecuting Christians are Islamic countries. And we are now beginning to see it come to America. And the different headlines that we have, let me see if I can go through this. The San Bernardino. Just last week, my wife and I were in Pasadena, and they were still talking about this. The Paris attacks, Boston bombings, Fort Hood shooters, beheadings in Oklahoma, street signs in Arabic in Michigan. And now we see there are Syrian refugees being brought to cities all across America, and the local communities have no say about it. And the FBI admitted there's no way of doing background checks. And so the concern is, are we actually bringing terrorists into our country? And now, most of them are not violent, and they're happy to live in our country. But there are some that don't like democracy, and they want to overthrow the governments of those countries. This is the Los Angeles Times had an Oscar-winning documentary on Pakistani women where they get acid thrown in their face if they're not wearing burqas. And then CNN reported child brides. Mohammed's youngest wife was 6 years old, and so there's Muslims that want to follow that example. And they have corporal punishment. And in Deira Square in Saudi Arabia, they chop off arms and legs every week. I actually talked to several soldiers that went there, and they say if an American's in the crowd, they push him to the front so they can witness it. And then they have Nigeria, and this is Christian villages that are being killed. Just lots of headlines, and I'm sure you've seen many of these yourselves. These are churches that have existed. I was in an airport talking to a Syrian bishop dressed in black with a big silver cross, and he says there are areas where for the first time in 2,000 years, all Christians have been wiped out. He goes, my diocese is empty of Christians. And so this is all happening during our watch, and it is important for us to know. Now, this is the grave of Jonah. In the Bible, from 700 BC, his grave existed in Nineveh, Mosul, up until last year. The ISIS Muslims destroyed it. And so we ask ourselves, why? Why do some Muslims, not all, not most, but some, why do some Muslims persecute Christians and Jews? Well, they think they're following the example of Muhammad. Now, Muhammad was the best Muslim that ever lived. His life is called the Sunnah, which means the way or the example. And his life went through three stages. And so we need to understand these three stages because the Muslims that are wanting to be like him follow this. And so he went from a religious leader to a political leader to a military leader. So this is the world 20 years before Muhammad was born. It's the Byzantine Christian Empire, right? So it was Roman, and then Constantine in 313 becomes a Christian. And then the whole Roman Empire is Christian for three centuries until Islam came along. And anyway, so Muhammad's father died before he was born. His mother died when he was six. His grandfather and guardian died when he was eight. So he was orphaned and taken in by an uncle, Abu Talib, who was a merchant. And so Muhammad would ride with his uncle on camel caravans to different cities. And they'd hear about the different religions, the pagan, the Zoroastrian, the Jewish, the Christian. And so in Arabia, they had 360 different pagan gods. They were mostly Canaanite fertility gods associated with the sun and the moon. And so they had their calendar begin with the first sight of the crescent moon over the desert. So this got incorporated into Islam. And they had this rock they thought had fallen from the moon, and they would kiss the rock, walk around this rock, bow to this rock five times a day. Muhammad kissed this rock, and so it got incorporated into Islam. So they kissed this rock before Muhammad as a pagan thing for centuries, and then Muhammad sort of incorporated that into his belief system. That rock was in this square building called the Kaaba with 360 other different pagan gods. Now, the Persians were Zoroastrian, and the Zoroastrians believed that paradise was filled full of virgins that would fulfill all the guy's desires. Muhammad heard this, and it got incorporated into his belief system. The Zoroastrians also believed in jinns or genies, that spirits that followed people around. Matter of fact, the word genius was not somebody with a high IQ. It was somebody that had a genie that told them all the answers. So the next time somebody says, you're a genius, you can say, no, I just have a high IQ. Now, Muhammad could not read, which is not uncommon for that area. Matter of fact, the UN Development Program reported in 2011 that 30 to 40% of people in Egypt today cannot read. And so the Jews and Christians were the exception. They could read. They were called people of the book. And so Muhammad was never able to read the Old Testament, but he heard the oral stories called Talmud and Mishnah, and some of those stories got incorporated into his belief system. And then there's the Christian faith. And even Encyclopedia Britannica stated of Muhammad, the gospel was known to him chiefly through apocryphal and heretical sources. So Muhammad thought the Trinity was the Father, Mary, and Jesus. Nobody explained to him the Holy Spirit. And apocryphal, what's that? those are stories that are not considered inspired, so they're not in our Bible. One apocryphal work was called the Infancy Gospel of Thomas. It was written several centuries after Jesus by someone who knew nothing of Jewish life, fanciful little what-if stories when Jesus was a little boy. And it's like you making up childhood stories of Abraham Lincoln. Nobody's taking this serious because it's filled full of all these errors and inconsistencies. But they were floating around the desert and Muhammad heard them. So the Infancy Gospel said Jesus spoke from the cradle, made clay birds and clapped and they flew away, and he raised a playmate from the dead. Guess what stories Muhammad heard, and they're in the Quran, and now they take him as fact that Jesus spoke from the cradle, made clay birds and clapped and they flew away and raised a playmate from the dead. There's no other place in ancient literature that these stories appear other than this Infancy Gospel that nobody then or now takes serious. And so Muhammad starts his faith in 610 AD, and he's very excited about it, feels like there's something in it for everyone, and anticipates that they're all going to join. But he only makes 70 converts in 12 years. And he gets frustrated and confrontational and begins to insult the pagans and tell them that they're going to burn in hell. And so the pagans consider him as disturbing the peace, but they can't do anything because his rich uncle, Abu Talib the merchant, was his protector. So his uncle dies in 619 AD. And then his wife, Khadija, dies in 619 AD. He goes on to have anywhere from 11 to 22 wives after that. But this is his year of sorrows, 619 AD. And so the people of Mecca decide to chase Muhammad out of town for disturbing the peace. And so Muhammad has no place to go. And he flees to a city called Al-Taif. They don't want him, and they pelt him with rocks and stones. And so he is a Muslim refugee. And so Muhammad then goes to a Jewish city called Medina. And the Jews had three Jewish tribes control Medina. And they were nice. They let Muhammad in as a Muslim immigrant. And so Muhammad goes into the minority neighborhoods in Medina, and he begins to organize a following. We're familiar with the term of organizing in the community. And so Muhammad organizes, he gets a following, he goes back to the Jewish leaders, and he pressures them to accommodate him and his followers politically and make a treaty. And so they do. The Jews make a treaty with Muhammad. Now Muhammad is a political leader in addition to being a religious leader. Then something happens. Muhammad's followers in Mecca, they get argumentative, confrontational, threatening, the way some of his followers are today. They get chased out of town for disturbing the peace. They go to Medina, and Muhammad allows his followers to rob the caravans headed to Mecca in retaliation for the Meccans chasing them out of town. So where Jesus said, if they take your coat, give them your shirt, his attitude was, if they take your house, you retaliate, take their caravan. So Muhammad got a whole chapter of the Quran, it's chapter 8, Surah 8, on how to distribute booty from robbing caravans. He gets a fifth of the booty. And so the Meccans send 1,000 soldiers to protect their caravans. And you can see on the map there the caravan route. And the Meccans send their soldiers, and Muhammad defeats them at the Battle of Badr in 624 AD. And this amazing victory, having been outnumbered 3-1, convinces Muhammad to be a military leader. And he fights in 66 battles and raids in the next 8 years before he dies. He even used the catapult when he attacked a city called Al-Taif. When he was told the catapult was killing innocent women and children, his response was, they are among them. So they got to be killed too. So suicide bombers and ISIS killers and San Bernardino killers say it's okay to kill innocent people to advance Islam because Muhammad did. And since Muhammad is the best Muslim, Muslims, they want to be better Muslims, they want to be more devout Muslims, they're wanting to be like Muhammad religiously, politically, and militarily. So there's freedom for all religions in America, but Islam is not just a religion because Muhammad was not just a religious leader. He was a political and a military leader. So a mosque is a religious building, a political building, and a military building. Bowing to Mecca is a religious bowing, a political bowing, and a military pledging of allegiance to another capital. And our effort in the West to split the religious side of Islam away from the political military side is we're trying to split Muhammad. Who are we to split their prophet? He was all three. And so we see there's two sets of verses in the Quran, and it's important for us to understand this. In the first city, Mecca, Muhammad was just a religious leader, so the verses he gets are just religious and they're relatively more peaceful. The verses he gets in Medina are political and military verses, and they're more violent. And the later verses supersede the earlier verses. By way of comparison, in the Bible, we have an Old Testament and a New Testament. Old Testament has some violence in it. Moses and Joshua wiping out tribes. The New Testament, Jesus and the apostles never killed anyone. And so what do we say? WWJD. The later, more peaceful example is the one we're going to strive to imitate. Right? It's the same way in Islam, only in reverse. Their peaceful verses came first when Muhammad was in Mecca. They're called weak verses, and they're superseded by the later verses that come in Medina. They're called strong verses. And so why is that important? Because most Muslims in America are nonviolent, but the Muslim Brotherhood is saying, first go in and pretend like you're just a religious Muslim, and then when the signal is given is when you have your Arab Spring and you become a political militant Muslim. And they said, well, that's what Muhammad did. He first came into Medina as a religious refugee, and then he switched and he became political military. So in 627 AD, the Meccans are hurting because their caravans are being robbed, and so they send an army of 10,000 soldiers to stop Muhammad from robbing caravans. Turns out Muhammad is a brilliant military leader, primarily because he's creative, he's unpredictable, he's unconventional. He does not play by the rules of traditional Arab warfare. And so these 10,000 Meccan soldiers are marching toward Medina. Muhammad's version of roadside bombs and IEDs was he dug potholes and trenches all around the city, which rendered the superior cavalry of the Meccans useless. You can't charge your horses and camels across a field full of potholes. They'll break their legs. And so it throws off the battle strategy. Muhammad goes to some of the tribes at night and he threatens them and they slip away. Goes to some of the other tribes at night and he bribes them and they slip away. Sort of the Chicago politics, the bribe or the bullet. And then it gets freezing cold for a week. The rest of the Meccans lose heart and retreat and go back home. Sort of like last year when our president declared the war in Iraq and Afghanistan was over, brought all of our troops home and it left a power vacuum. Did they all become more peaceful? No, they've got more violent. And so in this case, when the pagans retreated to Mecca, Muhammad was emboldened. He goes back into that Jewish city of Medina. And the first Jewish tribe does something to offend him and his followers. And so he whips his followers into a frenzy and they chase that entire Jewish tribe out and confiscate all their property. And then the second Jewish tribe does something that offends Muhammad and his followers, and he whips his followers into a frenzy. They attack that neighborhood, capture all their goods, and chase that Jewish tribe out. This actually set a precedent in Islam called Hudna, H-U-D-N-A, Hudna. It means when you're weak, you make treaties until you get strong enough to disregard them. So here we are wanting Israel to make a treaty with the Palestinians. The Islamic concept of treaty is just a ceasefire to restock missiles. Here we are talking about a treaty with Iran when their whole concept of a treaty is just to put your enemy off so you can finish your nuclear missiles. Anyway, so finally that last Jewish tribe, Muhammad bottles them in their neighborhood for 25 days. When they surrender, he brings them into the market and he chops off their heads, 600 or 700 of them, and then he sells the women and children into slavery. So within 5 years of Muhammad coming as an immigrant into a Jewish city, there's not a Jew left in the city. They were chased out, killed, or enslaved. And so we see it's a three-step process. Within 5 years of Muhammad's death, every pre-existing culture in Arabia was wiped out. And so, like Caesar said, Vini, Vidi, Vici, I came, I saw, I conquered. Muhammad was immigrate, increase, eliminate. Immigrate as a religious refugee, increase the number of your followers, and then get involved politically, and then you gradually drive out the previous inhabitants of the neighborhood. And so I was speaking in Detroit, Michigan. There was a lady who had a ministry to pregnant moms, and she shows up at the Muslim house and has a little present. Well, while she's there, out of a bedroom comes another pregnant Muslim mom. Out of a bedroom comes another pregnant Muslim mom. Out of a bedroom comes another pregnant Muslim mom, all pregnant by the same man. He's practicing Sharia law in his house in Dearborn, Michigan. And then a man says, well, Fazl, he bought a bunch of houses on the block, has a wife in each one. They go down to the welfare office and say the husband's not around, and they get these checks, and he visits the wives, and the more kids they have, the larger the checks get. And so he's practicing Sharia law on his block, and all the kids playing in the middle of the street are his kids. And then they take over several more blocks and they vote in the school board. And so now they have the girls wearing the burqas in the schools there in Dearborn. They take over several more blocks and they vote in the police department, the fire department, the city council, like Hamtramck, Michigan, now has a majority Muslim city council. And so then they put up their minarets and their loudspeakers and they have calls to prayer 5 times a day, the same as in Pakistan. And so it's a three-step process. And now there's a 1,400-year track record where we can observe this. So there's really no mystery. If I was pitching a stock investment, you would go home and look at the track record. Is it going up or down? Well, if I'm pitching a belief system and I say it's peaceful, well, let's look at the track record. And so there's three springs in the 1,400-year history of Islam. The first is an Arab-Persian spring from 622 to 1071. Second is a Turkish spring from 1071 to 1923. And the third Arab spring started in 1928. So I'm going to try to go through this really quickly. And Islam does something called psychological projection or blame shifting. It's where the attacker blames the victim. It's like a kid on a schoolyard pushing the other kids around. Finally, a kid swings back and the bully says, well, teacher, he started it. He hit me first, even though, you know. And so the Muslims would accuse their victims of offending them as an excuse to fight, and so they would conquer. And they had the invention of the stirrup, which came from Mongolia to Persia, and then the scimitar sword. And that's Muhammad's sword. It's in a palace in Istanbul. And so it's this general, Khalid ibn al-Walid, and Syria. Did you know Syria was the first country to completely be Christian, evangelized by the Apostle Paul? And Antioch, Syria, is where the name Christian was first used until Caliph Umar conquered Syria. And then the Muslims conquered Yemen, which used to be a Jewish kingdom, like you can see on the map. And then Jerusalem had been a Byzantine Christian city since Constantine. And then the Muslims conquered Egypt. Did you know Egypt was evangelized by Mark, that wrote the gospel, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John? And it was completely Christian for 6 centuries. And then there used to be 250 Catholic dioceses along North Africa, and they were all conquered by the Muslims. And then they invade Spain. This all happened within 23 years of Muhammad's death. It was then ISIS. It was them setting up their caliphate. Now, after Muhammad died, the supreme leader in Islam is called the Caliph. And his area he controls is the Caliphate. It's an RPM, a religious, political, military system. And they've always wanted to set it up. And so they went all the way from Arabia to Spain. Now, when the Muslims conquered the Roman world so quickly, it was a heart attack to the Roman economy. So trade across the Mediterranean ended, sort of like today, if China held their ships back for 3 months, all of our Walmart shelves would be empty. That's sort of what happened with Rome. All the trade across the Mediterranean stopped. One of the things that was traded was papyrus. These were reeds that grew along the Nile Delta that they dried out and used for paper. So suddenly there was a paper shortage in Europe. They wrote fewer books, and this was the beginning of the Dark Ages. And then they invade Spain in the year 711. Spaniards are still on foot with heavy metal swords. Muslims are on Arabian horses with stirrups and scimitar swords. In 10 years, they conquer all of Spain, cross the Pyrenees, conquer southern France. They're finally stopped outside of Paris at the Battle of Tours in 732 AD, exactly 100 years after the death of Muhammad in 632 AD. They go from Arabia to Paris in 100 years in a military campaign. And had Charles Martel, he was the grandfather of Charlemagne, had he not stopped the Muslims at the Battle of Tours, we would be speaking Arabic right now. Because German, French, English, and Spanish would have never developed as languages. We'd be like Egypt, where the Muslims actually cut out the tongues of anybody caught speaking the Coptic language. It took 700 years to drive the Muslims out of Spain. And so some definitions. The word Islam means submission to the will of Allah. A Muslim is one who has submitted to the will of Allah. And Islam believes there will be world peace when the whole world submits to the will of Allah. So to them, world peace means world Islam. So it is a religion of peace. It's just their definition of the word peace is different than ours. Our definition of peace is different groups getting along. Their definition of peace is having everyone submit to the will of Allah and become Muslim. Now, Lincoln said, we all declare for liberty, but in using the same word, we do not all mean the same thing. We all want peace, but we don't mean the same thing. Now, in Islam, the world's divided into two halves. The half that has submitted to Islam, Dar al-Islam, and the half that's in the process of submitting to Islam. It's called the House of War. It's supposed to be at war. Now, what about moderate Muslims? Most Muslims are moderate. Most Muslims are nonviolent. And they believe the world is going to submit to Allah later. Maybe in the distant future, maybe at the end of the world. And since it's so far off, they just want to live their lives. That's fine. That type of Muslim has no problem living in free democratic society and having you as a kafir infidel as a neighbor. The fundamental Muslim, on the other hand, they think the world is supposed to submit to Allah now, and they're really excited and they want to help make it happen. Now, the dilemma for us is the more we bend over backwards to show ourselves nice and respectful and tolerant, the moderate Muslim begins to say, this has never, ever happened before. Maybe the world is submitting to Allah now rather than later. And so they gravitate from the future peaceful camp into the fundamental now camp, which is the violent camp. So all of our efforts to show ourselves really, really nice is actually causing more violence. It's sort of like the law of the jungle. Our daughter used to have a friend that led tours of school kids to the zoo, and they would go past the wolf cage. And they'd have one kid walk in front of the cage, and the wolves didn't even bother looking at him. Had the same kid walk in front of the cage, dragging his foot, acting like he's injured, and all the wolves start looking at him. And then they're studying him, and they're going back and forth, trying to figure out how they can get across and get him. Weakness invites aggression. And so in Islam, they have a concept. When your enemy shows weakness, that is an indication that Allah is giving them to you. So when you're finally...
Wow. Weakness invites the enemy to come in. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Bill Federal. And he was talking about the rise of Islam. All right, that's it for today. Thank you for joining us. Listen to us all day long, because we're in your corner right here on Ghostbusters.
Cause if you let